countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers.
But we start in the west of Ireland this morning with a look at suckler farmers. They're farmers who raise cows to breed and suckle calves for beef. Most of these farms are small and are concentrated along the west and southwest of the country. So in a time when climate policy is putting pressure on all farmers in Ireland, what does the future hold for suckler farms? Patsy Crookin is a fourth generation farmer in Fionnuala in Clare with a herd of mixed shorthorns. He farms 200 acres with 78 acres of the land very high in biodiversity. During the week, under the scorching sun, I jumped into his jeep and headed up the mountains to see his animals. He explained to me why he checks on them every day.
You never know what can go wrong. But in the springtime, obviously, it's a bit more... you'd be a bit more concerned about them, especially when they're the first 3 or 4 weeks from calving, you know. And just to get out and after an evening or after a day where you've been maybe working and trying to get through stuff, there is a relaxing aspect to cattle farming.
So we're going up.
We're going up to
up
a place
the mountain.
Called Ballella. It's where my mother was born. Down here is where my father was born.
Mm.
So our family were there since before the famine. So they all kept cattle, all of it. The ground around here is very stony. Obviously, the old pastures have all the old grasses and flowering plants as well that the Department of Agriculture seem to be looking for at the moment.
The multi-species woods?
Well, multi-species, yeah.
We're going back to it, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've come out of the car, we're halfway up the mountain with the most astonishing view. We can look over towards Galway there. You can see the outline of the mountains, very dramatic. The sea in front of us, it's so hot today. It looks like someone's sprinkled glitter all over the sea. It's just magnificent. How do your animals fare in this kind of weather?
As long as they have water.
and a bit of shade?
Well, they don't have much shade around here now this time of the year. Trees are at a premium around Fionnuala.
How do you get the water up to them here?
We have a main system, but I don't believe in using it. So I collect water from absolutely everywhere. Sheds, roofs.
How big is your herd?
I usually keep about 43 or 44 cows. About 4 or 5 years ago, I reduced it a little bit.
Why?
Reduced by about 7 or 8%. Give myself an easier life, I suppose, really. My profits went up when I reduced the herd. I had less losses when there wasn't as much pressure on the system. I got away with a lot less inputs, and it turned out that this year it was a great idea because I didn't have to buy the fertiliser that I used to buy like 4 or 5 years ago. I would tell a lot of people to, if they're under pressure in their system of farming, certainly take a look at numbers. It's not always about numbers, and it's about the quality of your life. You'll find that you could actually be earning a lot more. And do the calculations and put a value on your time. There are some farmers who like to have numbers, but I would always stress to them, do the maths.
Mm.
Nobody likes the maths, but sometimes it's worth doing. We're in the field here. The cows are moving away because they think... they haven't seen two people in a good few days. I don't start feeding silage until maybe the second week of February, and then for about 2 months.
Because you're wintering them up on the hills.
Yeah, when they're weaned in September, October time, they go up onto the winters.
So that reduces your costs, I presume.
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah.
So they're all looking over now.
They're grand anyway, I know they're grand, so they're all in great shape yesterday evening, so...
You know, you can't talk about farming anymore in Ireland without talking about climate. And you certainly can't talk about livestock farming without talking about emissions cuts.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, for you, for suckler farmers in general, where are you thinking or how are you thinking about what you're doing and what may be coming your way?
Well, obviously there may be cuts in the suckler herd, and I wouldn't like to see it across the board, because in some situations I know a lot of farmers who were not stocked enough, and some of them have gone down to the bare minimum, and those are the farms that are suffering a little bit in the burn with biodiversity, because there's too much vegetation, it's not being grazed.
An economist would say dairying is profitable, suckler farming isn't. Cut the suckler herd.
My own view is that suckler farming can be profitable, and for me it is very profitable. I wouldn't dream of doing anything else. I know farmers who are not profitable because they have such long winters, and they have their cows in September, and they're in until April. That's a long time to be feeding cows, and that doesn't make a lot of sense as regards the financial end of it.
And why is it then that they continue? I think for people who only look at the financial side, they don't understand, why do you keep doing it?
I suppose they have very little alternatives, really. You know, most of those people now I'm thinking about wouldn't dream of changing their system. They wouldn't have land suitable for anything else. There might be bits and pieces suitable for tillage, or most of them would not be suitable for dairying. They're doing what they always did, and they're not going to change at this stage of their life, you know. Something they do every day, and something they go out and they're happy doing, and they don't really mind if it's not making a huge income for them, you know. I think they're quite happy to just keep doing it.
Well, I know from speaking to suckler farmers, they would regard, for example, retirement as a kind of defeat.
Oh, big time. I have lots of clients who are farmers who are in their 90s. And they won't give it up. They're determined to keep going until they drop on the farm. They've lived and breathed livestock all their lives, and it makes every bit of sense to them to keep going. As you say, they're looking at it maybe as giving up, you know, on life. When you're farming, and especially you have that attachment to your herd and your livestock and everything, you have such a bond with them, you know, and it's so important to you. The fact that the farms were handed down. Land is very important to people in Ireland. Sometimes I don't fully understand why, but I know myself I have a huge attachment to it. So
the farm meaning more than just the economics of it?
Of course, yeah, it does. I have clients who are not able to farm, but yet they want to be able to drive out and look at them across the wall and say, you look good, or... They might have to get somebody to cross the wall and go in and look at and count them and make sure they're all right. But that's keeping them going. That's a big thing for them.
So when climate policy comes into that, and there is a 25% cut needed across agriculture, and you hear that the way to get those cuts is to get suckler farmers to retire, pull all those animals out of the system.
What goes in instead then is the key. I can't see enough young people interested. You're probably going to end up with bigger ranchy type of farms in the future. I think you'll find a lot more of that.
Do you think that for the suckler sector to survive, there needs to be a reimagining of the uplands, particularly in the west of Ireland? Because, of course, from a climate perspective, cows are a problem because of methane, and they're a problem because of nitrogen.
Well, yeah. It's the only thing that'll work here, and you can't possibly graze out the wintergers with any other animal. We take a lot of pride in the biodiversity we produce as well, because, I mean, thousands of people come here every year to look at it and to see it and to walk our green roads and walk our hills and look at the flowers. And the product you're producing is enormous. The flora and is massive, you know, and I think we completely underestimate the value of what we produce, and we don't give ourselves the credit. It's been talked about that they pay so much per cow to get out of cows. You could have the wrong people taking it up. I don't like all these schemes and everything that sort of just go a blanket approach and one size fits all. You know, we had the burn scheme here, and it was developed over a number of years, and it tackled all of the issues. It came up with solutions for all those issues.
What do you say to people who argue that, given all the pressures, climate targets and everything, there's no space left for part-time farmers? It's full-time farming or it's nothing.
I certainly wouldn't agree with that. part-time farming is the lifeblood of the rural communities. If you had only full-time farmers, there would have to be really big farms. The life in the country would suffer incredibly, especially areas like this. You know, so I think it's very important that most of the people here would be part-time farmers, including myself.
Patsy Carrucan there on his farm in Fionnuala in County Clare. So at a time of huge change and potential disruption to farmers' lives because of the climate crisis and the cuts, what is it that we all need to understand about Sukla Farms and the farmers who are involved? Well, joining me this morning from Galway is sociologist Ónia McInwalsh from Teagasc and Shane Conway from the Rural Studies Unit in NUI Galway. Ónia and Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Ella.
Good morning.
Shane, I just wanted to start with you, and I should say you're also a part-time farmer yourself over there in the West. Listening to Patsy there, it must feel quite familiar to you. I mean, in your research, you've spoken with hundreds of small suckler farmers to understand these issues.
Yes, for sure. Everything Patsy said resonated with me. You know, I am an academic, as you said, but I'm also a farmer, so I'll be wearing both hats as part of this conversation. Mm. You know, and whilst on the outset they may seem different, because of the nature of my research and working with older farmers, the part-time farming, they're closely intertwined. So yeah, be it talking about the therapeutic benefits of farming, the connection to land, animals, and also the issues with retirement and that attachment to sense of purpose, you know, it all resonated. So it was great to hear from him.
And I suppose on paper, Shane, suckler farmers in general are older. I think the average age is 57 and tend to be male. I mean, I think we know that there's an increasing percentage who are women. But are younger members of the family more involved in the farming in that sort of sector than the statistics say?
I would say so, yes. When we talk about the average age, even in the dairy industry, which, there's a lot more younger people involved in that, it's still in mid-50s age bracket. When we talk about part-time farming, you know, 50% of our 139,000 farms in Ireland are part-time. And because of that, then there is that generational aspect that we have to consider, that in a lot of cases, these farmers are farming into later life, but their children may not have the reins, but they're still farming part-time alongside. It seems to be a cultural norm. It was only when I was talking to Anne earlier, we were talking about Dr. Paddy Commons' work in the 1970s, a real pioneer in this area, thinking outside the box in relation to the deeper meaning of farming. And he wrote about that then, and it's still applicable to this day. So from a farming background, I'm very aware that the younger generation are interested, particularly in, say, in pedigree livestock and breeding in particular. Huge interest. Go to any of the sales or agricultural shows around the country, you'll see it for yourself.
Ónia, just going to you, I mean, suckler farmers are, in general, I think it's fair to say, on small farms. And Teagasc, I know, occasionally surveys these farms. The latest one, am I right in saying it was 2017? I just wonder, yeah, what do we know? What did that report say?
Well, that report characterises small farms on the basis of statistical analysis. And we know that 16% of the total farmland in the country is operated by such small farms. We also know some data in relation to their performance with respect to climate. And nitrogen and phosphorus balances on a per hectare basis are lower on smaller farms. But it must be noted that we must consult more recent studies and more detailed studies such as Teagasc's sustainability reports to get more detail on those figures. For instance, one of the reasons that per hectare smaller farms do emit fewer greenhouse gas emissions, but that is largely dependent on their low level of output, the fact that they're quite extensive.
And we're talking about, am I correct in saying this, 52,000 farms classified as small farms. So that's about 37% of all farms in Ireland.
Correct.
You have said that the suckler farmer is a, quote, unique proposition. I just wonder what you mean by that.
The suckler farmer is a unique proposition in the sense that it does represent everything that Patsy described in your interview with him. It's very much a part of the culture of Ireland, not only agriculture, but in fact, Ireland as a nation. For instance, the knowledge of how to manage land long enough and intimately enough to know how to manage it properly, that's knowledge that's handed down from generation to generation. And if we look internationally at studies of family farming, we find that once family farming ceases or it fails to be taken up by the next generation, that knowledge is lost and it can never be replaced.
And, you know, the loss of that knowledge, I mean, what impact, I mean, you know, as I said in asking Patsy, everything is in the context now of the climate crisis. Everything is in the context of how do we manage the land? How do we make sure that we can get those cuts as well? You know, the loss of that knowledge, what impact could that have?
Precisely. And it's important to note that the knowledge is held also by the intergenerational dairy farmers. So what we're really talking about here is the value of the family farm, which is the dominant type of farm in Ireland. There's certainly it's acknowledged that particularly if we look at schemes such as the Burren Life programme, the Acres scheme, which will start next year, it's all about tapping into local knowledge of how to manage natural resources properly and effectively. So the standardised types of prescribed measures for national implementation, often we do know that they don't often support biodiversity as well as they can. We have to consult with local knowledge, develop local measures for local implementation, and these are informed by unique farmers' knowledge that's passed down from generation to generation. So we know that from not only from our own experiences here in Ireland, but certainly internationally. At EU level, the locally led approach is identified as the most promising when it comes to dealing with climate.
Shane, you know, we know that cuts have to happen. We know that suckler farmers will not be immune to this. The suckler herd has actually declined by something like 15% over the last decade anyway. How can the suckler farmers adapt to this new reality? And also, how can policymakers ensure there is some sort of just transition within that?
Yeah, you know, I suppose to put things into context first before, you know, are we prepared to sacrifice the 75,000 suckler farmers to allow the 15,000 dairy farmers to expand? I suppose that's the question because, you know, the average suckler herd is less than 20 cows, whereas in dairy it's 80 cows. And that means that, you know, there's still about 1.5 million dairy in comparison to less than 1 million. So it's put things in context because when we're talking about mitigation measures adopted by suckler farmers, they're already doing so. In a lot of cases, and even listen to Patsy, you know, the closer the herd is together in the sense that, you know, these 20 cows, there's a lot more attention to detail. A lot of farmers are adopting the Eurostar index for genetic superiority in their herds. You know, just to synopsize that, it's better efficiency, and by breeding the good genetics, they're reducing their age to slaughter, and by them entering the food chain at an earlier stage, they're cutting down on emissions in comparison to, say, the dairy beef sector, because the breeds that these suckler farmers use, they're be it the Charolais or the Limousine, they're fast growing, they've gained weight a lot quicker. So, you know, there's a lot to take into account. And of course, they have other measures like low emission slurry, mixed species sward. But I think a lot can be learned as well from, say, the tillage sector, the way you manage soil. The way you manage soil isn't being adopted enough by the suckler farmer or the sheep farmer. We need to learn how to use the soil more, because what goes on underneath is just as important as what's the grass management.
Indeed, indeed. And finally, Áine, I mean, it seems to me that looking at the likes of Patsy, who is part of the Burren programme, he's expanded not only his role as a suckler farmer, you know, he's a biodiversity farmer as well, but also the role of his animals. They're not just there for beef, they're there for nature. I mean, they do a remarkable job over in the Burren. Is that the future for suckler farmers?
I believe it is. And even if we turn to our current policy strategy for agriculture, it's all about the systems-based approach, Ella. And that was really depicted very well by Patsy. It's not simply taking a narrow economic view of trade-offs and placing dairy farming and suckler farming in opposition. We must look at the whole system. The relationship between people and their land, the deep love of the land that family farmers have for their farms, the way in which they wish to hand it to the next generation in good condition, the relationships people have with their animals, that's all part of a very important system that safeguards our food system. Consumers, a recent study has shown, they have a lot of sentimental value They place a lot of sentimental value on the Irish family farm. So I think that we sometimes can think, and farmers may think, that they're demonised in the context of the climate debate. But in fact, research would show that in fact many consumers value them hugely. And I think that food systems approach, where we take into account sentimentality, relationships, attachment and values, that's all very important for agriculture and rural communities.
All right. Well, it's a positive note to end on. Áine McInwalsh and Shane Conway, thank you both so much for joining us from Galway this morning. And my thanks also to Patsy Carucan.